T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
This is the home of the U, Miami's Sports Radio 560 WQAM. Welcome to Hurricanes Weekly, where we talk all things Canes every Sunday morning. Today's show is presented by Williamson Cadillac Buick GMC. Miami's premier luxury dealership is Williamson Cadillac Buick GMC. Visit WilliamsonAutomotiveGroup.com. Now, the voice of the U, Joe Zagacki.
A very pleasant good morning, everybody, and welcome to Hurricanes Weekly this Sunday morning, April the 22nd, 2018. Spring football coming to a conclusion yesterday at the Green Tree Practice Field. Baseball home this week on Wednesday against FIU, and then next weekend the rivals will meet in Tallahassee. Miami and Florida State both struggling somewhat this year in ACC play, but that'll be a big one next weekend, Miami and Florida State. We mentioned spring football coming to a close. That'll be the theme of our show this morning, and we'll kick things off taking a look at the Hurricanes defense with Hurricanes defensive coordinator Manny Diaz.
How's it going?
So far, so good. Thank you for being with us. Let's talk about spring football, the big picture so far. How pleased are with you what you have seen?
Pleased, you know, I mean, in terms of the goals that we tried to set at the beginning of spring ball, I think our guys are working as hard as they can to try to accomplish what we want, what we set out to accomplish. And even, I'll give you a great example of daylight today where, you know, we come out of our, you know, the spring showcase this weekend. We're at the stadium. It's an exciting time. They had every reason today to not practice their best. And we've been making a big deal about, you know, competing at a high level every time we're out, something we felt like we could have improved on from a year ago. And they were awesome today, you know, when human nature gives you every reason not to be awesome. So things like that have been signs as coaches, as a coaching staff on both sides of the ball that you've got, you know, maybe a little something special in the leadership of the team and they understand now what it's like to have to, you know, uphold the standard of winning every game at the University of Miami.
I was going to say, I think it's different for everybody the way they treat spring football, but what is the best thing that a coach or you can take out of spring football?
Well, spring football is like, it's like taking a car and taking all the parts apart, you know, and kind of getting every little piece as good as it can be, because we don't have to play anybody, right? So you're not saying, well, let's get functional for this Saturday so we can defeat, you know, such team. It's really focused on every individual and taking every part of your team and trying to maximize its potential. Then you got to get into games, and it's time to not talk about potential. It's time to talk about production and performance and things like that. And then you get back to spring, and again, it's really about developing what you have on campus. And one thing that I think as a staff we've been proud of over the couple of years is seeing some of the player development and seeing some of the guys either that we recruited or the ones we didn't recruit that have made, you know, big strides in their time on our campus.
Is it for the coaching staff, and is it easier now? It seems to be a kind of a fine-tuned machine the way the team goes through drills and understands the demands of the coaching staff. How different is it today compared to when you first got here?
Yeah, there's no doubt that, you know, two springs ago, everything was new. You know, I mean, where do we stand? How do we do this? How do we stretch? You know, everything. So, you know, that part's done. I think the neat part now is you really notice it, for example, like in mid-year guys. The mid-year guys, they come in and, you know, the older guys, they set the tempo. They tell them what's up. And so you see those guys coming into line with the rest of the team very quickly because the culture now is really in place and everybody understands exactly. And that's, I think, part of that goes to the credit of Coach Rick, too, who's a guy that's, you know, provides a great structure. It doesn't waver on who he is and how we're going to be. And I think the players enjoy that type of consistency.
Your defense has been very good the last 2 years. Do you look at it right now in spring and say, man, we can see this potential. We're getting better here. We're getting better there. This thing is really building to where we think we can get it.
I think that's part of it, but you have to make sure to not overlook the first things first, you know, because every year you want to say we can build off what we did a year ago, but it's a new season. It's a new team. And that's just the nature of college football. So, you know, what do we have to establish again? We have to run the ball. We have to tackle. We have to play with violence. I mean, all the things we talked about spring one, and because you can never assume that those things are established. They may have been established, but then, you know, you lose 7 defensive linemen, or you lose a guy here and a guy there, and all of a sudden, you know, what you assumed is what's now getting you beat. So I think those are the things that have been the most encouraging. I think that was what was encouraging to have on display this past Saturday. That was probably the best tackling scrimmage that I've been a part of. And, you know, that's a big deal for us, mm-hmm. because, as we talk about, we don't get to tackle very often. You know, and I'll be honest, I watch highlights of other spring games, and I see some of the tackling of some of these guys. Now, it can be – I mean, we can choose. I mean, we can have the spring game be, you know – 35 to 38 with a bunch of defensive backs falling on the ground and guys running for touchdowns, and you know that may be more exciting, but big time teams, you know, the defenses should show up in the spring games. And so I like the edge our guys played with on Saturday. I love the way we ran to the ball. I love the effort we played with, but more than anything, I just love the way we tackled.
I would say I'm not exactly sure. Maybe the most thankless job in college athletics today is being the defensive coordinator, because everything, all the advantages is to the offense. When you go through this process going into next year, what are some of the things that you look at that are going to be priorities in order to slow down these spread offenses? The things that you have to hit on all the time, is it yards per play, turnovers, sacks? What are some of the metrics that you look at?
Well, it's a great question. I mean, all of those. I think it's going to start always with your run defense, you know, which is yards per carry, not total yards allowed, because that's all, you know, an idea of how many times someone's going to run the football. Yards per carry is still a stat that correlates to winning, correlates to keeping the score down. Winning on first down, winning on possession down, which is the first play of a drive, or winning on first down, is so key. With all the metrics say, and we study it every off season. You know, certainly third down defense, which is an area that we've talked about that we feel like we can make great improvements, and we feel like we will make great improvements this year, coming off of last year. And then, you know, and then red zone. It's not, you know, we tell our guys it's not complicated. If you know, again, what I'm proud of Saturday, there's no guys running wide open. There's no you know, there's no big long, you know, pass plays for touchdowns. So if you tackle and you don't let guys, you know, run right open and deep in your secondary, it's going to be in the red zone. If you play great red zone defense, which we try to pride ourselves on, it's just hard to score on.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, between the Toledo game and the Virginia game last year, we didn't get up a touchdown from outside the 25-yard line. And to me, it's not a coincidence that in between all those games, I don't think we gave up more than 20 points on defense in any of those games. I forget how many games in a row it was. So if we don't, you know, if you don't give up stupid boneheaded big plays, you know, in this day and age, no matter how the rules are and no matter what offenses are doing, it's still hard to score on you. And I think our guys believe in that.
A couple of position battles. I guess some fans would be interested in how some guys are developing. In particular, your defensive tackles. Willis looks like he's been pretty consistent for you. Been out there every day. Pat Bethel looks like he's an able and willing battler at defensive tackle. What are you seeing inside of you with your guys?
Yeah, Willis has been awesome. Again, another guy just popped in my head over just today. I've just played at such a high level today. Day after. You know, 2 days after coming off a scrimmage, has that knack of making a play, has a great feel for the game. Pat Bethel is really, the second half of spring, he's really, really taken a huge step forward, playing alongside Willis. and just really seems to found a home. Really seems to sometimes things just click with certain guys. I think with the work that Coach Simpson has done with Pat has really made a big impact with him in there.
There's been a lot of discussion that you've been able to develop a new position, the striker position, which looks perfect for Derek Smith, kind of gives you into a 4-2-5 look. How important has that been during the spring to get a good look at Smith and Finley at that spot?
Yeah, it's been very valuable to us. It gives us a lot more flexibility in terms of things that we can call. It should obviously increase our response time on plays out in the perimeter, which is such a big thing now, and the way that offenses are rolling at you, it's another tool in the toolbox, and there's not to say you still wouldn't have games where you play a more pure nickel with a guy like Trajan, like we did sometimes last year. There might be some instances where you have to play with three bigger sturdy bodies like we did against Wisconsin, but I look at this more of just what our roster provides. Right. There's no doubt there's parts scheme that's involved, but the scheme doesn't matter if you're not putting your best players on the field. I think we look at it more as a coaching staff as, okay, we got these guys. How can we best maximize the best players on our roster? Because players should always come first before tactics. And, we like Derek and we like Romeo, and it's been up to them this spring to prove that they can be one of our best 11 guys on the field.
Well, it does seem what your roster is providing, especially in the secondary, is range or length. I'm not sure which way you want to go with that, but size, length, and range.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, look at us at corner. We are blessed with a bunch of long guys. Obviously, the new guys coming in, Frierson and DJ Abbey, who are our strength staff, has turned both those guys into, they look like they're arm wrestling champions in just 3 months. So, yeah, we've got some length, and length, it's not complicated. The thing about length shortens the field. It narrows the field, and length actually equals speed, so we can run, and then when you're longer, there's just less grass out there for the offense to try to attack. So it helps you in tackling, helps you in block disruption. There's a bunch of things. So we have we do have that, and again, if we can continue to a Miami defense should always be fast. Part of that is athletic speed, and part of that is just speed of thought. Mm-hmm. How quickly we can see and diagnose plays, and if we can do that again, we should be able to play, what we all expect Hurricane defense to look like.
You see, that leads me right in my next thought, because I love listening to guys, the way they talk about the identity of their teams. I'm listening to Eric Spoelstra talk about, and I know you're a big sports fan of the other teams in South Florida, and he said after game one, 76ers, they imposed their will, their identity on us. They never felt us during the game. They never felt our identity. Do you feel like, because you've got a lot of guys coming back now, that's the way you can go into games where you can start imposing your defensive will, your identity, and force teams to try to pull you away from the way you want to play?
Well, I feel like that's already happened. I mean, I think that's a credit to the players and the coaches that we've had the first 2 years. I think we've been able to establish that and to try to get teams to play more out of their character. Just the turnover chain and just what that did a year ago and just how that mentally – affected the other teams. We had four teams, the last four teams of the season, all fumbled in the first 6 minutes of the game.
Yeah, 21 turnovers in the last six games.
Yeah, so the more it was talked about by the opposing side, the more the ball came out. So I think that's all part of it. I think, and again, we all remember the Hurricanes from the glory days, and then that should be the case. I mean, we should be the one setting the tone. Now that's the give and take, and that's the back and forth. No different than what you're talking about the Heat Sixer series. I mean, that Philly's turn will be to respond, but the key thing and the key turning point I thought in that game last night was when Winslow got into Simmons and forced that offensive foul. I mean, that for the first time they knocked their Sixers were sitting there with their drinks in their hand, and they needed someone to come and knock their drink out of their hand. And sometimes people respond when they have their drink knocked out of their hand, and sometimes they don't. And I think any great defensive football team or basketball team or in any sport, you've got to make someone feel uncomfortable, and that's part of why stylistically we do what we do, and we play the way we play, because it's just offense is about, these offenses are too good You see in the NBA the way they shoot threes. You see in college football now with the spread game. And if they can get on rhythm, they're awfully hard to stop.
We did see the turnover chain make an appearance this spring. So it was big last year. I think it was one of the top three stories in college football. Of course, it becomes a story because you got turnovers in bunches. But we saw Frierson wear it during the spring, and I think it still has that magical effect.
Well, there's no doubt. Well, and we'll do the same thing. We will have to remember how we get turnovers. You know, it's it was never the chain first. I think there's a reason why we didn't do the chain the first year, because again, the first thing is about securing tackles, running the ball, tackling, and then again playing with violence. And if you play with violence, sometimes those guys holding that ball, it gets a little bit too hard on them, and they start dropping, and those quarterbacks they start throwing to us, and that's what we did a year ago. We had great ball skills last year. We upped our interceptions, and we've got a bunch of guys this year that will make a quarterback pay too. So it was great to see Gilbert get his at least a spring game pick on Saturday.
All right. Well, it's always great to talk to you. Before I let you go, I'll probably get us both in trouble, but I say this somewhat tongue in cheek. Do you think there is any way that you can get a holding call against the opponent's offensive line next year?
We're going to work on it, But, it always actually, as you know, Joe, they always call holding on the same play where we sack them.
Yeah.
So you either have to decline it, or if you take it, you actually wipe out one of your sacks. It's always kind of hurt your feelings. So, I will say this: our players, they never said peep about it during the year. I hope the fans, they all go crazy and boo and make everybody know it. But we just play, we expect it to be that way, but we don't make excuses for our performance and understand that, look, we're not the champion right now. And the champion's never going to win on the cards, right? If it goes to the judges, the champion's not going to, we're not that guy yet. And until we get to that point, we shouldn't expect any favors from the judges. And we got to knock out the champion. I think that's probably been the whole theme of spring. Is now that we finally have gotten into the ring, okay? Now we got to knock out the champ, and our players, to their credit, they're excited for the job.
Very good. As always, great to talk with you. Thank you so much for joining us on the show, and see you on the field.
Okay, Joe. Thanks.
All right, that's University of Miami defensive coordinator Manny Diaz joining us.
And when we come back on Hurricanes Weekly, we'll get a broader picture of college football and also zero in on the University of Miami. Kirk Herbstreit of ESPN joins us next as we continue on Miami Sports Radio 560 WQAM.
Radio.com. Radio.com. This is Hurricanes Weekly, presented by Williamson Cadillac Buick GMC on the home of the U, Miami Sports Radio 560 WQAM.
Hurricanes Weekly, brought to you in part by Williamson Cadillac, the recipient of the 2017 Cadillac Dealer of the Year Award and the number one volume Cadillac dealer in the U.S. 2 months in a row. All right, spring football wrapping up for the University of Miami. Had a good 6 weeks of practice on the Green Tree practice field. Had a scrimmage yesterday. Last year, Miami went 10-3. Kirk Herbstreit of ESPN had an opportunity to see the University of Miami three times a year ago, and we had a chance to talk with Herbstreit about the Canes.
You are one of the few that has worn the turnover chain that is not a defensive player for the University of Miami. In fact, probably the only one that has wore the turnover chain that does not play for the University of Miami.
Yeah, Virginia Tech game, I want to say Virginia Tech and Notre Dame, but Fowler put it on me. I had no idea he was going to do that. In fact, when he first put it on me, I had no idea that it was authentic. I had no idea it was actually the real chain, and it was heavy. That gave me great appreciation for it. What an incredible concept that they came up with, and obviously it became a big story locally for you guys, and then with the success of the team and the turnovers that they were creating, it became a huge national story. And I thought it was just you see it sprinkled around the country. Alabama has a belt, and I think other schools, I think Tennessee has a trash can, at least they did, with Butch Jones. And I thought what Miami did was a lot of fun, and I thought the players really had fun with it.
Yeah, I think I thought it was one of the great stories of college football. When you have something like that, you also put a target on yourself, because now the other team is going to say, well, we don't want to fall into that trap. We don't want to let them celebrate. We don't want them to be able to do or to get going, because the turnover chain represents a lot of things. But more than anything, it means we're forking the giving up the ball. So the last couple of opponents, I think, had a concerted effort not to allow Miami to get that chain out.
Yeah, you're right. But I you know, if you're looking at it as a coach and what it's doing, I never really felt objectively that Miami was taunting anybody with it at all. I thought they were just having fun with it. I thought I got a kick out of the guy who got the turnover. It was a race to get to the sideline just to be able to have some fun. Guys over there with their camera phones, and you know, it wasn't disrespectful at all. I think it was just more of a celebration. But you know how the world works that we live in. It gets a lot of notoriety, and you know, here comes your next opponent. And I think even Wisconsin, you know, had some, you know, some comments. I think their coach was caught on the sideline saying some stuff, and it's gonna clearly provide motivation. But I don't think it was designed to do that. They're not running out to in the middle of the 50-yard line, you know, doing the dance or anything like that. But I think you have to be aware, if you're Mark Richt or anybody on the staff, that, you know, hey, we're going to create a lot of attention with this, and people are going to want to try to, you know, not let us create turnovers. And I don't think the Miami, knowing those Miami guys, I don't think they lose a lot of sleep worrying about that.
Yeah, I think might have been the Virginia Tech game and the Notre Dame game. One of the first play of the game, the ball was batted in the air and the crowd went crazy. I thought it was a lot of fun. What was your perspective?
By the way, speaking of that crowd, I just want to give you guys credit down there. The Miami, we used to do games in the old Orange Bowl, and if Miami played a certain opponent, obviously if it was Michael Vick and Virginia Tech, and everyone knows about Florida State, there was probably not a better atmosphere than going to the old Orange Bowl with some of those great Miami teams that I was able to cover. I'm going back not to the 80s or 90s, but more like 01, 02, 03 in that era. And when they lost the Orange Bowl and they moved, and I know the team, the program maybe simultaneously was kind of struggling, but it never really felt like a home field advantage, even against the bigger opponents. And the reconstruction that they did to that stadium, I can just tell you, as a guy who's been doing Miami games forever, not a home radio broadcast, but a national broadcast, that Virginia Tech and Notre Dame game, those two games, and I don't know, maybe it was like that every home game, but those games were as loud as I can ever remember a Miami game. And if you're a Miami Cane fan and you go to those games and you're looking at this program with Mark Richt, I would be incredibly excited with that new facility and with the new head coach and with the new regime and the new recruiting and kind of where you guys are headed right now. From where you were about 7 or 8 years ago and where you are right now, you got to feel pretty good about the Hurricanes.
Yeah, 10-win season. I thought, actually, the games you had Virginia Tech, Notre Dame, then Miami played Virginia. They had a three-game stretch, three in a row at Hard Rock Stadium, and I've been around it a long time, that I thought were three of the loudest, most passionate games that awesome. They've had.
Yeah, they've done a really good job with the stadium. I don't know all of it behind, like, who's in charge of that. I know it's obviously Miami Dolphins Stadium as well. I'm assuming the ownership there did that. But I always wondered, wouldn't it be great to build Miami their own stadium near Coral Gables where the students could get to the games? And now after seeing what they did with the renovations, it's I know it's still a trek for the students to get up there. But the end result with a team that was incredibly productive and having a lot of success, it was great to see the vibe and the energy supporting that team and creating that home field advantage. You know, if Miami goes on the road and they have to deal with a lot of hostile environments, so you might as well make it tough on those teams when they come down to South Florida.
I think one of the great things that Mark Richt has done, and Manny Diaz, that made the University of Miami look like the University of Miami. I think certain teams in college football anyway, probably, even though the game has evolved, they need to look like the way they're supposed to. Miami, I think, on defense is supposed to look a certain way. You know, Alabama's probably supposed to look a certain way, so is Florida State. But Miami, I think they're regaining their identity.
No, that's a great point, especially go back to when I was a kid. As much as guys like Michael Irvin, and there's so many great names offensively that have made a name for themselves that are associated with the Hurricane program. But for me personally, I was in high school in the latter part of the 80s. And when I think of Miami, I think of defense. And I think of the speed, intimidation, and just doing whatever they need to do to win a game. And that's what it felt like that this year. I thought Manny Diaz has got the personality. I think he feeds into that and really challenges his guys to say, look at this legacy. Look at what's been here before us. And this is what we're going to bring back. And these are the personalities that we want on the defense. And, you know, I think so often while Miami was struggling, you would hear, whether it's analysts or people talk about the Miami swag. You know, and for me, like when I watched Ed Reed and Sean Taylor and those guys, the swag was just dominating people. It wasn't what you always saw going back to the 80s with the dancing and the flips and all some of the annex. The Butch Davis era was about flat out dominating people, scaring and intimidating people with defensive speed and intimidation with their physicality. And to me, I thought they took great steps in that direction last year. And I think the players really bought into what Manny Diaz was preaching. And I think that had a lot to do with the success. And again, this is just the beginning. I mean, these are the beginning building blocks of where they're going to try to continue to take this program, and especially that defense.
Kirk Herbstreit is our guest on the show. I think there were a lot of things to learn from last year if you're a University of Miami player. And one of them that I think I figured out was, and you can probably speak to this in terms of college football in the playoff, but when Miami beat Virginia Tech, I remember saying to my broadcast partner, Don Bailey, I said, well, this is great, but it's November, and we've got to do this six more times. And so if you're in the hunt in November, you got to keep playing great football all the way through January.
Yeah. And I do think that Mark Richt, coming from Georgia, has a real good appreciation for, it's not necessarily a sprint, but it's really more of a marathon. And I think when you're coming back, you had such great history, and your fans are starving for it to be back to that. And when you have a huge win, and people are excited to think, okay, we always want to hear, Miami's back. And I think what hopefully last year was for Miami, because you still brought up the Virginia game, but think about the Pitt game. I mean, it's easy to say, why didn't they show up, play with more energy? But that, whether you like to admit this or not, it's not just Miami. It's a lot of programs. You don't just flip a switch and just go from, okay, we've been losing for several years. Now we're going to automatically figure out the emotions of now we're winning big games. And it was predicted. I remember saying after they beat Notre Dame, they've had two emotional weeks. I can't imagine what the Virginia game is going to be like. And I really can't imagine going to Heinz Field and playing in a half-empty stadium the day after Thanksgiving, what that game emotionally is going to be like. I mean, it was very predictable that they could be flat. And yet they weren't able to avoid that. And Mark Richt understands that, you know, he said everything in his power, I'm sure, that week to try to avoid emotional letdown. And yet, until you experience it, that's the best learning tool. Unfortunately for the guys that are moving on, that have graduated, or if they're going to go on to the NFL, they won't get that opportunity to come back and play next year. But I guarantee you, part of their winter conditioning, part of their spring football, part of their camp in August will have a lot to do with how that team felt after they played Notre Dame, dealt with Virginia, and then dealt with Pitt, and where they were. They didn't have any gas left in the tank, and now they're going to learn a very valuable lesson about the importance of maintaining excellence as opposed to peaks and valleys. If you want to be a serious program, it's about staying power, and And again, I think they went through that, learned from it, and I expect them to be better off moving forward.
What did you think of your experience of game day on the campus of the University of Miami?
I would probably put it right up there with maybe the best game day that we had last year. I thought our director and the university, after a lot of discussion about where the set might go, and believe it or not, where the set ends up ultimately has a lot to do with what kind of experience the show has. And they could not have handpicked a better location to represent Miami for the nation to look at, okay, where's game day this week? Yeah, here's in Miami, then where they put us. And the fact that the fans came out, whatever being dropped off, we usually get there. The show goes on at 9 a.m. Eastern, and usually I get there at 7:30, and I pulled in, and there was a line that just was going forever. And I got out of the car, and I didn't know what it was. And I asked some of the people in line, and they're like, yeah, we're waiting to get into game day. And I looked in the line. It must have been, I don't know, over a football-length field long. And I couldn't even see in the other direction where it was going. And I thought, man, this is going to be hype. This is going to be so much fun. And then to have A-Rod there at the end of it with the swimming pool with some of the divers going off. And just a perfect representation and kind of an infomercial for Coach Rick and for the program there for 24 or 48 hours.
You have a great eye for the quarterback position. Miami does have some competition this year at quarterback, but Malik Rozier accounted for 32 touchdowns a year ago. You saw him three times. What are your impressions of where he is and where he needs to go?
Well, there were times when, you know, especially early in the year, where you'd watch him get into some lapses, and it seemed like he was very streaky. And then, you know, in the fourth quarter, I remember especially early in the year, I remember the Georgia Tech game, and there was another game where he put together a couple big drives and some big plays, and it was like, okay, this is what this young man capable of doing. And then you go back and look at the Virginia Tech game, he was very decisive, you know, with his decision-making, whether it was getting the ball out or recognizing on some of those quarterback zone reads or the draws, he would recognize that the linebacker was out of there. And how many times did we see him follow his center quickly and make quick decisions and pick up huge yards? And then there were times, you know, against Pitt where he was just kind of lethargic and didn't have the fire that he had played with earlier. So you know a lot better than me. You've probably seen him since the bowl game and throughout spring ball. I mean, it would be his job to lose, I would assume, based on the experience he gained from a year ago. But as an outsider, that's the one position that they're going to have to really tighten up, because they're going to recruit tremendous skill around that position. They're going to have great linemen, going to have a great defense. But let's be honest, in order to get to a playoff and ultimately a national championship, which I'm sure is what Mark Richt and the Miami Hurricanes goals always are, you got to get consistent play from that position. So if I were Malik, that would be the area, not just throwing with the receivers, but, man, I would be looking at so much film and studying coverage and understanding, well, here's our answer to this, here's our answer to that. Because when I'm watching NFL or college football, and I watch guys like Baker Mayfield, I'm convinced more and more that it's the guys that play that position that have done so much preparation that they have an answer for everything you do. And if you're going to disguise your coverage or blitz late, he's going to see it, boom. He doesn't have to think about it. He has his answer. And I think Malik has shown he has some great physical attributes to bring to the table, but he's got to take that next step and being a guy that can figure out what teams are trying to do to him and make him pay for it.
Yeah, you know, I think that's a perfect analysis. It's funny that you bring that up, because I was with Coach Rick today in his office, and two things. One, you mentioned Malik, how physically he is. He's 225 pounds. He's a big, thick kid for the quarterback position, but probably more important, and I'm not sure Malik will take advantage of it, but I hope he will. Coach Rick and I were looking out his window today, and we're looking at that new indoor facility that's going up, and I said to Coach Rick, I said, well, now your quarterbacks and receivers will have no excuses not to be on the same wavelength, because they can go in there, you know, starting in August all the time.
How cool is that? I mean, right? And I know Miami's Miami, great weather, but you know, you also have a lot of rain at times. You have excessive heat. And how nice is it for quarterbacks and receivers to be able to have a place where they can always work on their game? And it's great that the administration's listening to Mark Richt and some of the things that he wants to kind of take this program to the next level. And let's face it, whether we agree with it or not, 18-year-old young man who's being recruited by Florida or Florida State or Alabama or Georgia and Miami, and he's going around looking at all these different places and who's committed to the game and who's not. And, you know, you just continue to impress recruits with how important football is and how much the university is dedicated to making this a winning program. And little things like that, you know, go a long way in trying to make an impression. And not to mention the use you get out of it and how functional it can be.
On my way out of the office, by the way, a guy named Desmond Howard was on his way into the office.
Oh, okay, good.
So Des was
right there.
Yeah, he was there today. Before we let you go, two other things. One, we had your partner Chris Fowler on the show not too long ago, now a Miami resident. And you guys had some great games at the end of the year. But you also have great chemistry between the two of you. You worked together for a long time. And from one broadcaster to another, it appears to me that you guys have great fun and joy in the booth.
Well, you know from being in the business how important that is. And I love Chris. I love Des. I'm so lucky to be able to work on our studio show where, you know, it used to just be Chris and Lee Corso and myself. And years ago, and we did that for a long time and had a lot of fun, and the show has grown, and Des now is such an integral part of what we do and does a great job. And Reese, of course, has replaced Chris, and we have David Pollack who's in there, and you know, Tom Rinaldi and Gene Wojciechowski and all these different pieces that have come together and helped the show. And you know, I'm not just saying this because I'm talking to you. If you and I were talking privately, I'd say the same thing. You know, you know, you go to dinner together on a Thursday night on site. You go to dinner on a Friday night on site. Hang out. You know, things like that really rub off when you're on camera. You know, I think when you have that natural chemistry. And Chris and I, you know, we've been working together now for 25 years. And there's just certain things that that you know from being in the business. I trust him. He can trust me. He knows he can count on me always being ready to go. And I can always count on him being ready to go. And just really lucky to be together and have a great team in our truck. And just knock on wood, that's what makes this not only fun covering a great sport, but to be able to work with great people also makes it just extraordinary.
Yeah, I don't know how the hell you do it though on a Saturday. Go from one place to another to do a game. To me, that's remarkable. One other thing, and I don't know how many people see this or understand it. Mentioned to Chris. Probably, I don't know, 25 years ago when I first started, 30 years ago, on a Saturday afternoon doing a scoreboard show, a little old lady would call in and say, could you give me the Indiana score? And it was Coach Corso's mom. And
oh, my gosh.
Yeah, and the other thing is then a little bit later on, we had a little Sunday night TV show down here, and we'd bring Coach Corso in. On Sunday, we'd fly him in after he did the Saturday thing. And he's getting up there a little bit, but he's been a stalwart of your show. And it's very noticeable how well you take care of him along the way. So I think that's probably very much appreciated.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. He's special to all of us who follow the sport. And I've been working with him since 1996, and just have watched all different, so many different shows and headgears and moments. And he's, you know, he had a stroke, as you know, several years ago. And I think sometimes people don't realize he's 82 years old, and people think sometimes he's getting older. It's still the lingering effects of that stroke that he's dealing with. And myself and Reese and Des and David, we. You know, it's a little bit of a fine touch because you don't want to instantly jump in and help him right. All the time. So you want to try to help him in his kind of a like you're just smoothly helping him without making it look like you're helping him because he's very prideful and he wants to show that he can do it. But 82 years old and still knows the names and still knows what's going on and still loves what he does, and just the king. You know, he's the king in my opinion, and hopefully he'll continue to do the show for a long, long time. And when Lee Corso comes on game day and puts on a headgear, you know it's college football season.
Yeah, it's that's quite a thing. All right, well, we got the 10 wins last year. That jump from 10 to 12 or 13, whatever it is, whatever it takes, is a pretty big jump. But eventually, I think Coach Rick's going to get Miami there, and that means we'll have you doing some more games.
Be awesome. Look forward to it. Thanks for having me. It's great to talk college football anytime. And good luck to all the Miami players that are getting ready for the draft down in Dallas in a few weeks. I know there's going to be a bunch of their names that will be called, and all very deserving. And it opens up opportunities for that next wave of players to step up, which I'm sure they're in the middle of doing in spring ball. And before you know it, we'll be ready to crank it up and see what's going to happen. And actually, I think I'm calling. Is Miami playing LSU?
Yes, that's the opening game, Miami and LSU on a Sunday. Labor Day weekend.
Okay, I'm either doing that one. I might be on Saturday and Monday, but I remember that Miami-LSU game, which was a heck of a way to start the season. One thing great, real quick, about playing a team like that week one is it gets the players' attention throughout winter conditioning, spring football, and into camp. Is you're playing LSU on national TV as opposed to, I'm not knocking, you know, someone else, but, you know, playing a lesser opponent. It sometimes isn't as exciting, but you play LSU on the opening night, that'll get Miami fired up and ready to go and try to get off to a good start. So let's talk again in August and see where we are.
All right, very good. Yep, that'll be at Cowboys Stadium. We look forward to that. Thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
You got it, bud. Take care. Have a great week.
Thanks so much to Kirk Herbstreit for joining us. A reminder, Hurricanes baseball playing FIU on Wednesday. And season tickets for Hurricanes football on sale, 1-800-GO-CANES. Or go to hurricanesports.com for more information. Let me talk to you for a moment about Williamson Cadillac, the recipient of the 2017 Dealer of the Year Award and the number one volume Cadillac dealer in the U.S. 2 months in a row. Experience their wide selection of certified pre-owned Cadillacs, all with a 6-year or 100,000-mile limited warranty and certified to the highest standard with a 172-point inspection. A certified pre-owned Cadillac from Williamson Cadillac is giving you the best of both worlds, unmatched luxury, and a unique automotive buying experience. Plus, peace of mind and confidence come standard. Williamson Cadillac is conveniently located at US 1 and 104th Street, just south of the Palmetto Expressway. Williamson Cadillac, for over 50 years, treating you like family, has made Williamson number one. Visit Williamson Cadillac today or WilliamsonCadillac.com for full warranty details. Williamson is Miami.
Radio.com. Radio.com. This is Hurricanes Weekly, presented by Williamson Cadillac Buick GMC on the home of the U, Miami Sports Radio 560 WQAM.
Happy to welcome you back to Hurricanes Weekly, Sunday, April 22nd, 2018. Hurricanes baseball continues FIU on Wednesday. Next weekend, the Hurricanes will be in Tallahassee to take on Florida State. Season tickets on sale as well for Hurricanes football. 1-800-GO-CANES. Our show brought to you in part by Williamson Cadillac, the recipient of the 2017 Cadillac Dealer of the Year Award. All right, on offense, the Hurricanes this year expecting more explosive plays. Of course, spring football, there was a battle at the quarterback position with Malik Rozier, Nikosi Perry, and Jaron Williams, and Malik Rozier emerging as the number one quarterback going in to fall camp in August. For more on the Canes offense, joining us now on the show is Hurricanes offensive coordinator and running backs coach Thomas Brown.
What have you seen? What is your assessment so far of what you've seen of your offense during the spring?
Well, it's been too much of up and down, you know, too many mental mistakes. If you kind of saw the spring game, it was some bright moments here and there, some plays being made, but just we're repping a bunch of guys that we won't normally rep in the fall. A lot of them young guys kind of just got here at the mid-year point, but just got to do a better job of locking in and being the focus. But we have plenty of talent. Plenty of guys that can get the job done, but you got to do a better job of being consistent every single day.
A guy that jumped out to everybody the other day, of course, was one of the new guys, the freshman Brian Hightower. Right. And has he been like that the entire spring?
The entire spring from day one. We kind of talked to the entire offense when we got going about what it takes to put yourself in a spot to play. To take someone's job is knowing what to do, knowing how to do it, and being consistent every single day. And he's definitely been that guy from day one, both in the pass game, but also run blocking as well.
And maybe the most significant move of the spring happened on the offensive line. Big Navon going from guard to tackle. How is he making that transition?
Really well. I mean, even through the recruiting process, Navon wanted to be a tackle, kind of coming into it. And guys just started at the guard because we had some older guys that have been here already playing tackle. He's getting the opportunity he asked for, and he definitely has the ability to do it. So we had a little bit of a right tackle issue. The first scrimmage or so, we gave like 1,000 sacks, almost at that same spot, seemed like it. So it's obviously good to see Navon out there competing, and I think it's kind of lit a fire up under him to be more competitive and kind of take ownership of that spot.
Everybody, of course, always wants to know about the quarterback position. You've got good competition going there. Maybe go through them a little bit. Your incumbent, Malik Rozier, accounted for 32 touchdowns a year ago, 31 total touchdowns. So that's pretty good production to start with a guy coming back, but he's getting chased a little bit here by Nicosi and Jaron Williams.
Yeah, I think competition is great for everybody at every single spot. I think you can only push yourself so far. Even the guys that are the most motivated guys we have on our roster still need other guys around them to push them to be the best that they can be. Definitely Nicosi has provided that to Malik and also Jaron Williams as well coming to mid-year. Now, obviously, you know, Malik has got a lot of experience, played a bunch for us. Last year, you could even talk about the production that he had. And when he was on, he was really good and had some bright moments. But obviously, just trying to be more consistent with running the offense, knowing exactly what to do at all times. But when it comes to ball placement, accuracy, putting the ball in play, and giving our receivers a chance to make the catch, going to be big for us moving forward when it comes to the competition battle.
You know, it's funny how this competition thing works, because a lot of people look at it and go, okay, Nicosi's chasing Malik. And, Jaron Williams and Cade Weldon are there. But meanwhile, wait a minute, those other two kids, they're chasing Nicosi as well. That's going to make him better, going to make Malik better. But Nicosi's got to know he's got some guys breathing down his neck.
Absolutely. Just even like I said before, from the quarterback spot to any position we have on our team, every spot is up for grabs every day. And, what guys did last year is phenomenal. But this is not last year. It's a new year, new opportunities, new guys have added to the competition mix. So, I mean, the more talented football players you have around, the more competition you obviously breed, and the better results you have.
Hurricanes offensive coordinator and running backs coach Thomas Brown is our guest on the show. All right, let's talk about the position you also oversee, running back. And you got a few bodies out there this year. You've got Homer, you've got Dallas, you've got Burns, you've got Lingard, and you've got one coming in. So you've got some more to work with.
Absolutely. I mean, obviously, just having a kind of stable of guys who have been healthy, probably the most we've had since I've been here at Miami. And very talented guys. You know, obviously, Travis Homer sets the tone, like I've been kind of saying from day one. He's got the most experience. He knows exactly what to do. He's very coachable, and he darn near does everything perfect every single rep, which obviously kind of continues to put him out more and more out in lead as a starting spot to keep that starting spot every day. But just from a leadership standpoint, he's stepped up to become more vocal. He's always led by example, which is always huge. But we lack leadership on offense as a whole, so the more guys we get to step up and be vocal, the better off we'll be. And obviously, DJ being the backup tailback from last year, we moved from receiver. There's a guy that always makes plays. You know, I just know no matter where you put him on the field, whether it's running back, a receiver, a wildcat quarterback, you put him as a returner. He's dynamic with the ball in his hands, but just trying to transition to being an every-down tailback. And I think it's more about being able to be comfortable with pass protecting. He knows what to do, just being able to have more reps. He's obviously ready to go against our defense every day. That brings a number of different looks to help, obviously help us become better. And a great guy to kind of work against from a pass rush standpoint. Then guys that are kind of young guys that haven't played a bunch with, Robert Burns, I'll start with him first. It's probably been the big surprise and the most improved tailback this spring, just because last year he was kind of banged up. Off and on the entire year. He kind of came in and had surgery last January, practiced a little bit during spring ball and got hurt again, had another surgery, then kind of came in the fall camp, was looking healthy, and kind of had some hamstring issues. So I know he's been frustrated, and I'm glad to see he's been kind of working to get himself in better shape and better condition and taking better care of his body. And he's a physical presence. I mean, he's a 225-pound, one-cut downhill runner. We're trying to get him to become more confident in his ability, and understand what he can be and what he can bring to the table with the way that he does. And then obviously you got Lorenzo Lingard, that came into mid-year this year, a highly talented freshman with all the physical gifts in the world to be successful, but just trying to learn how to to operate an offense, just from a run game standpoint when it comes to our footwork, our techniques, our coaching points. But pass protection is the hardest part and the biggest part about playing tailback, and it separates those guys that have a chance to come in and play early, whether it start or in a backup role, and the guys that have to kind of sit and wait and become better at that.
You know, the thing, we introduced DJ Dallas to the listening audience last week, and they got a little bit of his the charisma that he brings, and I think I think that's also healthy for a team to have charismatic players. Not that he's the only one. I think you've done a good job both offensively and defensively recruiting guys that bring that, I'm going to say, Miami charisma.
There's no question. I mean, when you talk about the recruiting process, there's a talent evaluation. When obviously we're bringing in guys who can help Miami be great, as Miami should be. But like you just talked about, the off-the-field intangibles, you know, what a guy brings to the table when it comes to football IQ, his mindset, guys that are competitive, you know, tough guys, and DJ definitely kind of fits all those categories. And he's the same way almost every single day of practice. He comes out with great energy, great enthusiasm. I think he's become more comfortable with being in a leadership role because, you know, last year he was a freshman, and it's hard for a freshman, even though when he plays and makes some highlight reels, to step in the role, to be comfortable enough to step into the role of being a leader. But obviously going into year two right now with more experience under his belt and having more confidence, he's definitely become that type of guy for us on offense.
There's an old saying in baseball that goes like this, speed never has a slump. And you have a few guys with speed, in particular Jeff Thomas, who starting to utilize that speed in the spring.
There's no question. I mean, I'm about to use that quote this game. I've never heard that before. I'd be one I can add to my arsenal. But Jeff is definitely a dynamic guy. We saw that coming out of high school, saw it in spurts last year. But just, again, trying to get him becoming an all-around player because in the wide receiver room we have at Miami with Coach Dugans, if you're not going to be involved in the run game and be willing to go stick your nose in there and be a physical blocker, you can be the fastest guy, most talented, best hands on the field, you're probably not going to play a whole lot. And Jeff is definitely taking on more of that culture from Coach Dugan. Done a great job with him, mentoring him off the field as well as being on the field as well. But Jeff is dynamic on the field. He can score from anywhere on the field when he has the ball in his hands. So let's try to find as any way as we can to get him to touch the ball.
Should also mention before I let you go, the Calvary is also on the way. You've got Amon Richards pretty much sitting out during the spring along with Njoku, and then you've got a five-star receiver, Mark Pope, coming in, and you've got two tight ends coming in, so and another running back, and another wide receiver from Georgia.
So
you've got some more big play elements coming in.
We've got some talent. We've got to continue to bring in guys that help us become great, and I know those guys are chomping the bit to get here. Talk to all of them from time to time, and we're definitely excited to add those guys to the mix and just hope they're ready to come in with the mindset to be great, to be focused, to be detailed, and come compete every single day. We definitely got some help on the way.
And as spring
football, we already have.
And as spring football coach wraps up, what do you tell your offensive guys that they must do between the end of spring and then when you bring them back in August?
We'll build upon it. You know, we started our offensive conditioning program with Matt Drews, which is probably the toughest part about our program. It kind of breeds and develops mental toughness and being able to add, you know, from that to spring football and now just help those guys not to take a step back going into the summer and work themselves in a phenomenal game shape and mentally and physically get ready to go. Be great this fall.
All right, thanks so much to Thomas Brown, Kirk Herbstreit, and Manny Diaz for joining us on the show. Also a big week for Hurricanes football in terms of the NFL draft is coming up on Thursday night, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. So we'll see where Hurricane players such as Kendrick Norton, R.J. McIntosh, and Braxton Berrios end up playing in the NFL. That'll be exciting to watch. The NFL draft coming up on Thursday. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you next week right here on Hurricanes Weekly. Have a very pleasant good morning, everyone.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.